Case number 19-6409, Carla Parton versus Johnson & Johnson et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Plouf, you may proceed for the appellant.
May it please the court, Thomas Plouf, representing the appellant, Carla Parton. Please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Viewing the facts and inferences in our favor, Carla Parton was entitled to a jury trial on all tribal issues of fact, including whether she sued within 6 years of her date of injury from Prolif Mesh. 6 years is the deadline for the statute of repose at issue. This is a product liability case that began with two surgically implanted products. And as the evidence developed, it was learned that the Prolif Mesh was the one that injured Parton. Plaintiff's expert, Dr. Rabin, only opined about Prolift. The district court granted summary judgment on the statute of repose based on an improper
question. Can I ask you a question about the statute? Because I find it a little bit confusing. Normally, at least in my mind, a statute of repose is keyed off of an action from the defendant. You know, when the product was put into commerce, when the building was completed, you know, when the doctor acted. And that would be consistent with the 10-year repose. This statute says 6 years from the injury. And injury has always struck me as a limitations concept, although the way the 6 years is phrased, it's phrased like a statute of repose. It seems to have concepts from both. And I know the Tennessee courts have called it a statute of repose, but what do we do with the injury? It seems like it's an odd thing to trigger a statute of repose with an injury. I mean, are you, well, go ahead.
I mean, I think it's odd in a medical device context, but I mean, ordinarily, you know, if an airbag doesn't go off when it should have, your date of injury is right at the time of the accident. But I mean, in this context, it is problematic. But I mean, I think at a minimum, you know, in Claybo, they held that, you know, the date of injury is when the product first harms the plaintiff. And with a lot of products, a lot of product liability cases, that's not going to be an issue. But here, you know, what's very clear is that there had to be proof that Prolift caused an injury to Ms. Parton.
Would you concede that you're not able to recover damages for anything that happened to her outside of what would be the 6 year period? In other words, if she had pain in 2009 and you say that pain was not caused by the product, it was the other symptoms later. So you can't recover for what happened to her back in 2009, right?
Right. And Dr. Rabin opined that he was not claiming that there were any that Parton was hurt or damaged in any way before the erosion of mesh in her in 2018.
But that particular deposition testimony, I think you're referring to, that was not put in front of the district court for purposes of the decision you're challenging here. Is that correct?
Well, that was in Dr. Rabin's report, Your Honor.
Well, in the report,
foreign evidence.
The report uses a different phrasing. I mean, he doesn't say, the report is about whether a doctor would have known in 2009 or would have attributed in 2009 the pain to the implant. Is that correct? Is
that fair? That certainly is what the district court said.
Well, that's what he flat out seemed to say in his report. I mean, his report doesn't say she suffered no harm from the mesh until 2018. right?
No, I disagree, Your Honor. The report says that she was first injured from mesh with the erosion in 2018. And you know, you're taking one inference from the fact.
Hold it, all right? I'm not doing any inferences. I'm just trying to nail down the record in this case. So tell me where in his report he says that she doesn't suffer harm from the device until 2018. Because what I read suggested he was talking about whether a doctor could attribute the harm to that. And if I'm wrong, I wanna know that.
Well, we're probably reading the same thing, Judge, but with regard to the record entry 51-2, page ID 804.
51-2, all right.
51-2, page ID 804.
Uh-huh.
With regard to the Dr. Murphy visit in January 2018, it says, this is the first time it can be said that the mesh implanted in Ms. Parton by Dr. Knight on November 3rd caused an injury in Ms. Parton.
Now, this is in the report?
Yes, I just read it verbatim.
Okay.
Now, the district court trivialized whatever Dr. Rabin had to say by putting it and labeling it as a discovery evidence. But I would suggest that if you're giving the inferences in favor of the non-movement, as should have happened, the inference to somebody saying that no doctor, going with the language he described earlier for some of the other incidents, that no doctor should have discovered or should have thought that the mesh caused an injury. It's that the mesh did not cause an injury at that point. That's the other. There's two ways to infer what Dr. Rabin's saying. The one favorable to us is there was no, you know, the doctor shouldn't have thought there was an injury because there was no injury. And that was an inference that the jury should have been allowed to have come to. It was taken away from them.
On that point, I mean, and I'll ask the same question of opposing counsel. Under this Tennessee statute, is the existence of an injury at a particular time, whether it's more than 6 years ago, is that a question of fact for the jury under this statute of repose? And so would be subject to the usual kind of 12B6 and then Rule 56 standards? Or is this some kind of legal determination that is reserved for the court?
Well, you know, I think it's one of those things, Judge, where under some circumstances it could be a legal determination. I mean, if, for example, if the airbag didn't go off, all right, well, it's clear that the injury was at that time. I think that could be legally determined that way.
Sure. But
I mean, here, though.
Is this subject to Rule 12 and Rule 56, just like any other factual question in a case? I guess that's kind of what I'm driving at.
I think that a statute of repose can be a summary judgment issue, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. I think that answers.
You know, I just don't think that under these circumstances, it should have gone out on summary judgment because there was a factual dispute as to when Parton was first injured from ProLift. And we're not, you know, picking up on the comment about, you know, whenever Dr. Rabin said that a doctor, you know, shouldn't have known that it was ProLift mesh. We're not saying that when Parton or any doctor became aware that she was injured from ProLift, it has anything to do with this case. That's not a statute of repose consideration. The discovery statute's just, discoveries doesn't go with statute of repose. What's the problem here is that she decided that Parton, the court decided that Parton was first injured in 2009 from ProLift mesh. The defendants brought the summary judgment on only one ground, that Parton unequivocally testified that she experienced pelvic pain in 2009. That's the record entry 40, page identification 380. Totally absent is a statement that ProLift caused this pain in 2009. The district court stated, quote, Parton testified multiple times that she suffered injury in 2009, close quote. But again, that something's absent. The question is not just whether an injury happened in 2009. The question is whether an injury from Pro-Lift occurred in 2009.
So your argument is that there's at least a fact question on whether the pain in 2009 was from the pre-existing before the implant or some other source other than the product. Is that right?
Sure. Yes, Judge.
And that causation question, I take it is different than a discovery question that we would talk about in statute of limitations. That's a causation of the injury, and that has to be part of the repose analysis.
In a medical device context, yes, probably. I mean, in any context, I mean, again, if the airbag goes off, I mean, causation is not a big issue, right? But
are the defendants? I could ask them, I suppose, are they stipulating that their product caused the pain in 2009 and therefore start?
Oh, no. We sent them a request for it to admit, you know, that there was an injury that happened before the 6-year period ran out and they wouldn't admit to it. And that just puts us to our proof. But I do think that it highlights the fact that the only thing they're relying upon is Parton's testimony. And really what they did was they took an interrogatory answer and then they that said identified injuries, and then they coupled it with a with deposition testimony on the year that it happened without ever bringing the points together that it was the mesh that caused the injury. That was never done through Parton. It was never done by any of their doctors. None of the witnesses. The sworn evidence was injury not until the erosion in 2018.
Let me ask you this question. I understand that it's the erosion that causes the major issues, let's say, according to your allegations. But even if, let's say it wasn't, let's say that the implant itself caused some minor injury, but outside of the statute of repose, would you be barred? Even though your claim is that it was the deterioration of the product, I mean, you would still be barred, right? That's the way that a statute of repose works in a product liability case, isn't it?
Yes, but I mean, that's a tough question, Judge, because if I have a pacemaker put in, I have postoperative pain. If I have a hip implant put in, I've got postoperative pain. Is the pain the injury? I don't think pain's the injury. And under those circumstances, I don't think that it would trigger the statute of repose. But there certainly are some circumstances where I would agree with you that a minor injury, like for example, let's say one of the types of erosions that they just go into the office and snip it out. Maybe that's a minor, that would be a minor injury that would trigger the statute before there was a more extensive erosion, for sure.
You don't have to make that more difficult argument in this case, do you? I mean, because your argument is that there's some evidence that it might have been caused regardless of the implant.
Yes, it's pelvic pain is multifactorial. Could have come from, and she had it before.
Right.
She had it before the mesh implant. She was complaining of pelvic pain. And
even if we construed Judge Nalbandian's question extremely against you, you would still have an argument that no pain was caused, at least a jury could find that no pain was caused by the mesh prior to 2009.
Yes, we had that evidence of record.
Thank you.
Okay, you'll have your rebuttal. We'll hear from the appellee.
May it please the court. My name is Susanna Moldovenu and I represent the appellees Johnson & Johnson and Ethicon Inc. There's no ambiguity in the Tennessee Products Liability Act statute of repose. It requires that the lawsuit be brought within 6 years of the date of injury. The plaintiff...
Right, and it's... it's injury to the person or property caused by the defective or unreasonably dangerous condition, correct?
What the plaintiff alleges to be caused by the product, yes.
Right. So it's not just that she has some injury, some pain or whatever. In this case, it has to be pain caused by the implanted device, correct?
That's right.
Where does she say that her pain in 2009 was caused by the implant as opposed to her having pain?
She does it in her deposition in conjunction with her interrogatory response. So in interrogatory number 14, plaintiff was asked to provide a detailed description of the nature, extent, and duration of any and all injuries that you attribute to the Ethicon mesh products.
And so her lawyer is basically answering this for her, or helping her with that.
Certainly.
So that she doesn't attribute her pain to the device in her deposition testimony. I don't see that being connected up in the dep. How am I missing that?
It's in the deposition, the interrogatory number 14 response was given to her as an exhibit. Then she walked through each of those injuries that's in interrogatory number 14 and was asked, when did this injury begin? When did this injury begin? And she testified that as to pelvic pain, that began in 2009. Within the first year after that surgery.
So for example, what page would you direct us to as an example of what you're talking about?
On pages 105 to 106.
Okay.
And then again, 108 to 109.
Yeah, but it says after the surgery, I'm looking at 105. After the surgery, when did you start experiencing generalized pelvic pain? Not long after. That doesn't equate to it was caused by the device. I mean, this is just temporal proximity stuff asked of a layperson about generalized pain. The idea that she's testifying here, at least in what I'm looking at, she as a layperson is sitting there testifying that, yeah, I suffered pain in 2009 because of my implant. I'm just not seeing that at all.
I think the court has to understand that this entire portion of the deposition was being asked in conjunction with that interrogatory response.
Well, you know, I mean,
a little bit more clear later in the deposition on 108 to 109.
I did products work and took plenty of depths. And I mean, if you're asking a layperson questions, trying to elicit an answer that she's attributing her pain in 2009 to an implant, you have to ask that question. You can't just have some interrogatory in the background and then say, well, the layperson knew or should have known that because I referred to an interrogatory and that interrogatory referred to a particular injury, that when I asked after the 2008 surgery, when did you start experiencing generalized pelvic pain? I was talking specifically about pain because of the implant. I mean, this is really just quite attenuated, an attenuated reading of the record, I would suggest.
But there's no dispute here in the record that the plaintiff is seeking compensation for those injuries that were occurring at that time.
But it seems to me that the interrogatory answer says that she has a variety of permanent injuries. And I don't, why is the plaintiff not able to decide, I'm trying to recover for my permanent injuries that I think were caused by the deterioration of this product that was implanted in me, and I'm defining my injury that way, and that's how I'm going to, that's what my recovery is going to be limited to. I mean, you could just ask them for a stipulation and they would say, we're only going to recover for things that started in 2017.
that's simply not the record here. The plaintiff here is seeking compensation for all of the injuries. So in Dr. Raybon's report that the plaintiff cites, Dr. Raybon walks through all of these injuries and says that these—
But you have to prove, it seems to me that you bear the burden of proof on an affirmative defense, right? Agree? So you have to prove that her injuries in 2009 were caused by your product in order to win, right? Don't you have to prove, that's your burden. You have to show that those injuries were caused by your product. And then, ironically enough, you get to bar the lawsuit. But how are you carrying that burden of proof here?
It's enough for us to establish that there were injuries that were occurring that are at issue in this lawsuit that occurred during that time period. The defendant doesn't bear the burden as a plaintiff would at trial to establish with expert testimony that the injuries were caused by the device at that time. We can accept the plaintiff's allegations as true. The plaintiff sought compensation for all of these injuries, and she testified about when they began, and it was in 2009. That's also borne out by the medical records that also show that she was in 2009, was experiencing pain. And then in 2010, returned to her surgeon who initially implanted these devices, complaining of pain. So it's there. This is not the case that Your Honor describes where the claim has been apportioned in the district court record by a certain period of time. She sought compensation for all of these injuries.
What if you had a case where a plaintiff thought that the injury occurred from the mesh all the way from the beginning, but you knew as an objective fact that no such injury resulted from the mesh until years later? I know that's not this case, but I'm wondering about, I mean, you seem to be focusing on what she was arguing, but the real issue is the fact of whether there's the causation or not, not so much. In fact, a lot of your brief is aimed at, we're not looking at what she knew or what she thought or what she relied on. We're looking at the real fact of whether there was the causation.
In that instance, I believe it would still be time bar. We accept the plaintiff's allegations in the lawsuit as she brings it. We accept this lawsuit as it was brought.
So that means you admit that your client's device harmed her?
No. I wanted to discuss that request for admission that plaintiff pointed to in his brief.
Plaintiff, I don't know how you can accept for a purpose helpful to you certain factual propositions, but you reject those same propositions when that's helpful to you.
It's not required for a defendant to admit causation, in effect, admitting liability in order to assert a statute of repose or statute of limitations defense. If that were the case, a defendant could very, very rarely ever assert a statute of repose or statute of limitations.
Well, as Judge Nalbandian points out, this is a very strange statute of repose with respect to its, starting a clock based on injury. That's pretty unusual. I think this might be another way of asking Judge Rogers' question. Is the question whether she had an injury from the mesh more than 6 years before the filing of the lawsuit, is the question whether such an injury existed, is that a question that we determine under Rule 12 and Rule 56, just like any other factual question, or is this somehow different under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure or Tennessee law?
It's decided under the typical Rule 12 or Rule 56.
Okay, so if there's evidence that could support either side's position with respect to the existence of the injury, creating a genuine issue, then it would go to a jury. Is that correct?
That's correct, but there is no such evidence here in the district court record. As Your Honor pointed out, Dr. Raybon's report was simply walking through the various injuries and saying, when could a physician determine that it was caused by mesh. When could you first say that? In 2009?
Well, okay, but before, I'm just trying to get the rules of how we're going to make this determination. So we have a factual question as to which you bear the burden of proof because it's an affirmative defense, correct?
Correct.
So you bear the burden of proving, showing as a matter of law that your product did harm this plaintiff more than 6 years before she brought suit. It's not just whether, you know, she somehow conceded that the injury arose at a certain time. It's your burden to show that she had an injury caused by your client's device more than 6 years before she brought the suit.
That's correct. And we submit that we met that burden with this interrogatory response and her deposition testimony and the allegations in this lawsuit.
Well, she's a layperson. I mean, let's read it the way you want. The deposition testimony, she's a layperson. What does she know about how her injury was caused? Her testimony would not be sufficient proof for a jury even to find that. I mean, if she said, let's say she's testifying about 2017 and she said, my injury was caused by the mesh implant, you wouldn't say, okay, then I guess we're liable. Her testimony doesn't show that.
She's a layperson, but it was the only evidence that was in the district court record at the time of summary judgment.
But it's your burden to show that that your client caused this injury more than 6 years before it was filed, and her testimony would seem to fall well short of meeting that burden. Meanwhile, her expert report seems to say otherwise. So I don't think you prove that your client caused this injury more than 6 years. I mean, I'm just struggling to see that.
It's not our burden to show that the product caused the injury with expert testimony. We accept the plaintiff's allegations as true. If there had been expert testimony that refuted that in this record in the district court, it might be a different case. But in this record, there was nothing to refute, as Judge Matisse correctly determined, there was nothing to controvert that her injuries began within a year of her surgery. There was simply no other evidence.
Injuries from the mesh.
Correct. That was the plaintiff's testimony, and it was.
Oh, again, what does she know? I mean, what does she know about how her injury was caused?
That's simply not the standard under the Tennessee Product Liability Act, that a statute of repose must be established with expert testimony. In none of the cases cited by the plaintiff was that the case. And if it were, you could never have a case be dismissed on the pleadings for statute of repose.
Well, it just depends on the issue. I mean, some questions require expert testimony, others don't.
The district court simply applied the standard that is well settled for Rule 56. We accept the allegations, we view them in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. But here, there was simply no evidence of causation other than the plaintiff's own testimony of to what she brought this lawsuit for. And there's no support for any other standard in the Tennessee Products Liability Act. I see I'm running low on time. I wanted to address one point that counsel raised, which is the district court error by not distinguishing between the two products that were implanted in the TVTO and the ProLift. I note that this argument was not raised anywhere in this litigation until the plaintiff's reply brief on appeal. It was not raised in the plaintiff's opening brief, and that alone is forfeiture. It was also not raised in the district court. The plaintiff's support for this argument was not even part of the district court summary judgment record. As Judge Kethledge pointed out, Dr. Raybon's deposition testimony was not part of the summary judgment record before the district court. The district court was correct to accept the plaintiff's own sworn testimony as to when the injuries for which she seeks compensation began. That was in 2009. The claims are therefore barred by the Tennessee statute of repose.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your argument, and we will hear rebuttal.
let me start with that the counsel said to take the plaintiff's allegations as true. Well, in the complaint, which is record entry one, hashtag page number two, the complaint alleges she wasn't injured until 2018 from the product. As to the comment, as to their trying to bring the 2010 situation into play with, and that involves the visit with Dr. Knight. And again, they didn't argue 2010 to the district court, September 2010. They argue it here, but Dr. Knight reported that Parton's pain with sex and vaginitis, which is inflammation of the vagina, were due to atrophy and a yeast infection, so not the prolift mesh. So while pain with sex could be an injury, there's no proof in 2010 that the prolift caused the mesh, caused the injury. And, you know, Mayo Clinic lists out something like 20, and so, and they're not above arguing that atrophy of the vagina causes dyspareunia or pain with sex. I mean, that was in, we cited the Carlton case in a footnote where they argue atrophy is the cause of that. So in the Mayo Clinic says there's 26 different causes of it. And the, you know, another thing that just shows the significance of not, you know, we've always, this issue about there being two products and we haven't distinguished the two products. I mean, our theory was always, you don't have a proof of an erosion from prolift. You've got other things going on. And the district court fundamentally misunderstood that there was a second product involved here. I mean,
can I ask you about the interrogatory? Because I want to get back to that for a second, because it does say, your answer did say that she has a variety of injuries, although it says permanent injuries, but injuries due to the Ethicon mesh products, including pain with sitting, standing, walking, pain during sex. So that's all things that were that you just identified, or at least one of them from 2010. Why doesn't that then carry the burden of proof for the defendants? Those are the injuries that you said in the interrogatory, and you just said they're from 2010.
No, I never said that prolift mesh caused any injury in 2010. Ms. Parton never said that injury from prolift was caused in 2010.
Right. I'm saying that the interrogatory answer identifies the injuries, identifies X, Y, and Z as being caused by the mesh, okay? And if we look at 2010, after the implant of the mesh, she is complaining about those exact things. So why isn't that enough to say, okay, you were at that point, that's your injury, and that's the injury you're complaining about?
Because she had those things before the mesh was implanted. She had pelvic pain before the mesh was implanted. She had pain with sex before the mesh was implanted. There's multiple causes of pain with sex, including atrophy. So there's no, there. And at worst, there is a jury issue whether any of these conditions were caused by their product. It's not, this is something that can't be decided as a matter of law, particularly when you're dealing with a woman who's obese. She's 5'8", 325 pounds. She's got complaints to the Social Security Administration of pain with sitting, standing, walking. That goes back 6 months to before the mesh was ever implanted. And I see my time's out. We'd ask that the decision be reversed and the case remanded so she gets her day in court.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you both for your arguments. The case will be submitted, and I believe that the clerk can adjourn court.
This honorable court is now adjourned.